Hello, and welcome to the Needs Improvement Podcast, your regular deep dive into reimagining mental health and well-being in the workplace. I'm your host, Nicholas Whitaker, coach and co-founder of the Changing Work Collective. In every episode, we sit down with thought leaders in organizational health, as well as individuals who've navigated the complexities of mental health, well-being, and belonging in the workplace. Our goal? To dismantle the stigma surrounding mental health, ignite meaningful dialogue, and inspire both employees and leaders to revolutionize the way performance is gauged at work. So if you're eyeing a healthier, happier chapter in your professional life, you're in the right place. Together, let's transform the places we work into the places we would love to be. Let's dive into what needs improvement. Hey, folks, and welcome to another episode of the Needs Improvement Podcast. I'm your host, Nicholas Whitaker, and I am here with Bonnie Davis. Bonnie, hello.
Hi there, Nicholas. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really well. Bonnie, tell us a little bit about yourself for the audience.
Yes. Well, you and I have Colorado in common. I live in Colorado. I live in Denver, but I'm from New York, which I think is relevant because I have some mixture of, got more of that New York vibe, but the Colorado lifestyle, which I love. And I have spent my career doing things that are around change and learning and growth and impact. So for me, I knew that I wanted to study psychology, but I also wanted to be in an office building. I wanted to be in Manhattan wearing a parasuit, which is funny because I'm sitting in Colorado in my yoga pants. But I thought I wanted that. And then when I discovered that psychology and business go together in the field of organizational psychology, I got so excited. It has a name. And got my master's in organizational psychology. And I've always done some work in this field. So in consulting roles in big companies, in HR roles, in tech companies, and the last 12 years on my own, the company is called HuWork, as in inspiring humans at work. So the work that we do is all about creating human-centered workplaces, which involves one-on-one coaching, team workshops, and consulting projects that help on the people side of business and helping people be more successful, because my experience when I was on the other side in a corporate role, and I know yours was similar, is that work can be really hard. Mm-hmm. Work can suck. And I love that I have the background and experience and passion to help people make all of that easier, more successful, more fulfilling, and more human.
Oh, I love this. Well, first of all, it's always good to see a recovering New Yorker in Colorado. I also was there for like 13 years. So I often feel like there's a little bit of a juxtaposition between that New York vibe and like the Colorado vibe that I'm starting to cultivate. But I still think I'm a New Yorker.
For sure. Through. Yeah. It's a mindset. It's a heart and soul thing. I get it.
It definitely is. Yeah. It goes deep. So I'm curious, you know, you mentioned this idea of a human-centered organization. First of all, I love the idea of this. Tell us a little bit about what that actually means in practice.
Yeah. Well, we have an assessment. And if you go to if I can give a shameless plug from my company website, the assessment is free. So anyone can go check it out. It's called the Human Factor. And it is right there on the top of the homepage of HuWorkTeam.com. That's HuWork, name of my company, the word team.com. And it literally answers the question, how human is your workplace? And it is not intended as a deep analytical tool. It's intended as a conversation starter. So I don't really know a single manager that doesn't aspire to have more of a human-centered workplace. So you may be doing great. This is an opportunity to take inventory and see where do you shine, because as we'll talk about in a little bit, as a strengths-based coach, I am all about looking at the good stuff and celebrating the good and being really intentional about the good. But we're human and our workplaces are certainly far from perfect, so there's going to be opportunities to improve. So that often becomes a great baseline just to open up the conversation with clients on their 7 different focus areas and what's great and what do you need to change or improve. And from there, sometimes it looks like making change happen at the organization level. Sometimes it's deep in the HR processes and systems that are broken around rewards and behaviors. Sometimes it's more about at the team level. And then sometimes our leaders don't have the support to make big change happen across the enterprise, but they as a leader want to go deeper. So it becomes also a nice self-assessment to say, when we're working on coaching, what do you want to do differently as a leader? And so we use that to create your coaching focus areas.
That's a really beautiful framework, you know, and it's interesting too, because I mean, the name of this podcast is Needs Improvement Podcast. So much of it has to do with the things that needs improvement within the modern workplace. It's kind of derivative of the lower performance ratings that people may have gotten in these corporate environments. And so often what I hear from my clients is like, they were not set up for success. Their strengths weren't really being highlighted, mm-hmm. and they didn't really have the type of coaching and mentorship that they needed to really be successful. And it sounds to me like having a really clear idea of what your strengths are and being able to be in environments and with other leaders that are encouraging you to lean into your strengths is probably a pretty important component of success within the workplace.
Yeah, absolutely. Most of us were raised where you come home with a report card. And so if you had 4 A's on your report card and 1 B or C, what did you hear from your parents with that in response to that report card?
What happened with the B?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so we've had that our whole lives. We have been conditioned, whether it's been in school, on sports teams, certainly you mentioned performance review processes. They are more about, for most of us, what's lacking more than celebrating what's there. Yeah. So, and then by the way, culturally in some countries, this is more prevalent than others. It's like more, 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 never enough mindset. So it's not natural for most of us to start with our strengths. And even with my children, he did this and she did that. They're 15 and 19. And there's less of that now that the 19-year-old is at college, but there's still plenty of it when he's home. And I start with, okay, what is your responsibility in this? What is your sister? What is he or she do well? What are their strengths? We can always nitpick at home or at work about what is missing, but to also understand the positive. And a lot of this, you and I in our coaching work know a lot about reframing, and a lot of it is the reframe and understand. If you said to me, this is so hard for me, Bonnie, I have a difficult employee, and he's just, you went on and on about what a terrible employee you had, I would start with what does this person do well? You're never going to have an improved relationship with somebody if you're only pissed off and frustrated. And so I call it, or we call it with my work with the Marcus Buckingham Company, using the strengths lens. Can you imagine the world would be a better place if we saw ourselves first? By the way, we beat up ourselves. If we saw ourselves and each other first through the lens of what we do well before the lens of all that's missing or lacking.
Yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned that too. Because I mean, again, so many of the clients that I talk to, it's the self-punishment. It's a self-flagellation against the things that they're not good at that tends to come up to the forefront. And we have to spend so much time really thinking about gratitude, looking at the things that they're actually good at, celebrating those things. I don't know that that's really like a natural reflex for a lot of people in Western cultures. Is that something that you've noticed?
I completely agree. Again, the natural reflection, I think, is more, 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 never enough, not good enough. And, you know, it's great that we've had this self-help culture and that we aim and aspire for more. But you have to start out with, what do I do well that will help this get better? Mm-hmm. If I am terrible at delivering presentations and I hate it, but it's part of my expectation at work, let's start with, what do you know that you do well to help that get easier for you? You can read all the books in the world on how to give a presentation, but if you still in your head that script is saying, but I suck at this, then you're probably not going to get better. If instead your script is, I have deep expertise and I'm excited that other people will benefit from my expertise, that is a much more supportive way to get better at presentation skills, as an example.
Ah, that's beautiful. So I'm kind of curious, you know, there's this idea of building strengths and identifying and growing your strengths. Like, how does one actually go about doing that? And then how would that necessarily apply to impact or meaning within their careers?
Yeah. Well, there are a few ways. So the first is self-reflection. I have some fun questions like, what do you do better than 10,000 other people? That may not be quite the right number, but you get the idea. For you to really go deep and think about that, what do people go to you for? What are the things, if you really thought through, there are things in your personal and professional life that people say, hey, can you have a sec? I have a question for you. What are those things? What do you get praised for? Whether it's going back to performance reviews or it's just thinking in life, people, things that people say, give their appreciation for. It's also what most energizes you. When you are feeling that sense of energy and flow, It is probably because you are doing the work that you most love to do. When we're not in our strength zone, we feel exhausted. It doesn't mean that you can't learn and grow. It can actually be fun, but it's going to be more exhausting, probably. It's probably not going to be the stuff that really energizes you. So that's one of the, those are some of the informal ways to think about your strengths. There are, of course, assessments to do that. So two of the most popular are StrengthsFinder, that a lot of people do. And so StrengthsFinder gives you, it's, I call them resume bullets. It's like, here's my top five, like those words that you'd put as your action verbs on a resume. And then the one that I use that I'm certified in is called Standout, which is more about your top two strengths roles and how you address any situation.
Beautiful. So tell us a little bit about this, this model that you use, and like, how does that actually unfold within a client coaching relationship?
Yeah. Well, the first step is take the assessment, and a lot of coaches have some assessments built in, and I don't like to do a ton of assessments. Frankly, I've worked with coaches where I'm given like a battery of six or eight assessments, and I find it a little bit overwhelming. Like, yeah, this is a lot of data. I don't know which way is up. So I don't do many, but this is one that I really like. So it's about 15 minutes. I think actually you took it.
I sure did.
So we can talk a little bit more about your experience with that. So quick, easy, free. You go, and I can make sure that you have that link for the show notes. You go on. I will mention that Marcus Buckingham, who many of your listeners may be familiar with. So Marcus was really the creator of the whole strengths-based revolution over 20 years ago at this point. And so it used to be that the assessment Standout costs, you buy the book, and then basically that was your fee to take the assessment, you know, code in the book, kind of a typical model. Well, when COVID started, Marcus said, you know what? The world is a really hard place right now. If I can help make the world better by helping people know what they're really good at, like, we're so down. I can't hug my mom. I can't go to work. I can't go to the grocery store. If I could know what I'm great at, then he wanted that to be his gift to the world. And so that has stuck. And as far as I've been told, it will continue to stick, that it will be free. And so you go, you take the assessment. It's really fun, as you probably saw. It's situational questions. How would you deal with different situations, common situations in life? And 15 minutes, poof, you get a PDF of about 14, 15 pages, meant to be pretty self-explanatory, but also, of course, you can go deeper and get a debrief with a certified coach to just go a little bit deeper on how it applies. And so from there, I may ask you, for example, you asked how it would apply in coaching. So, Nicholas, your top two are teacher, creator. You may be stuck in a certain situation and you don't know how to get through it. And I may ask, well, what would your teacher do? What would the teacher in you do? And so it can help get us unstuck instead of seeing things like, this is so hard. It can help us see things through the lens of what we're better at in coaching.
I love all of this. Yeah. And it was interesting too, because like I did take the assessment when we first started talking in preparation for the podcast, and it was uncanny to me the results that I got back. It was like, wow, like, you know, there's a lot of assessments, a lot of quizzes and things like that you could take online. And usually it's a little bit like hit and miss, but this one was like, wow, this is really, really resonant. And I'm kind of curious, is this kind of the typical experience that you get with your clients once they go through that assessment?
It is. And I will share full transparency. Mine, when I first took it, it did not immediately hit me as like, ding, 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 that's me. And that was because I was making a few assumptions. So one thing, I love this assessment. One thing I don't like is that some of the top roles you can make assumptions about. So for example, yours is classic. You're a teacher, creator. We all know teachers, what they do. What do? They stand up in front of a room and they teach people. Actually, that's not in this case. Teachers are more about getting, listening to people, bringing out the best in them by asking them the right questions and really using the idea of learning to help people be their best. And so some of them, the advice is twofold if it's not initially sticking. So I will say majority of my clients are like you. They're like, this is kind of freaking me out. It's so spot on. if it's not, first of all, excuse me, go beyond the front page, the nine roles, and read it a little bit deeper. Because in those explanations, and I tell people, take a pen and just old fashioned, take the red pen, circle the things that are most resonating for you. And if they don't resonate, you know what? you could also cross them off because, you know, it's just an assessment. It may not be 100%. The other piece is it took some time for it to marinate for me. It took some time. And literally, I did this first, I think, in 2015. All these years later, I still sometimes will do something and I'm like, oh my God, that's my connector provider. Like sometimes we just need to think and marinate and make sense of things. So I can give you examples of that. But anyway, most people say spot on. And if not, I'd say like, give it time to simmer. My last piece of advice, if it doesn't fully resonate, and this has been really funny with some clients, I'll say, ask the people who know you the best, because the thing with standout is it is about how you show up to others. It is not how you see yourself. It's how others see you, which is really, really different than a lot of other assessments. So I'll say to people, print it out and share it with your spouse, your best friend, whoever, your peers. And at that point, almost everybody comes back and people go, oh my God, of course that's you. Do you remember yesterday you did this? And so that's a funny moment of self-awareness of how we don't realize how we're showing up for other people sometimes.
Yeah. And imagine too, within the workplace, I mean, my gosh, like if we had a better clarity about how we're showing up in response to others and in company of others, both as an employee and as a leader, I imagine that provides an enormous amount of data then to help us adjust or refine the way that we're showing up to really show up in the ways that we most want to be.
Yeah, for sure. It's all about self-awareness and intentionality. And it also really helps teams work better together, because now imagine you and I are on the same team and we've sat around a room and we have a chart where we can see everybody's top two strengths roles. And I even do an exercise called Come to Me When. So come to me when you have a big juicy problem with a difficult customer. Somebody else might go, ooh, I don't want those, you know? So imagine how better teams can work together. If you could be really open and honest about like, I do want to do this stuff. I don't want to do that stuff. I'm really good at this stuff. And so, you know, I think a lot of strong teams have a general sense of that, but this is like a really open, transparent, data-based conversation about everybody's strengths.
Yeah. So I'm kind of curious too, like from an implementation standpoint. So let's say you're a leader, you care about having a high performing team. You want to make sure you're getting the very best out of your employees and you're helping them lean into your strengths. Once the employer, once the leader for that matter is able to take an assessment like this, like how do they put this into practice to actually start to change the culture of a team or change the way that they interact with their employees?
Yeah, that's of course the hard part. I think we've all had assessments that, well, wasn't that a fun day away from the office? And then nothing happens. So there are a few ways. I mean, some companies that use this, actually, there is a tool. So Standout is an assessment. It's also a platform. And so some companies actually use it as like their talent management system, where they get coaching tips that come to them once a week and they can see on a dashboard everybody's top two roles, and they do a weekly check-in, like in the tool, actually talking about what they've done that they've loved, where they need help from their manager. So that's like a deeper commitment of companies that are implementing like the whole thing. More than that, I've seen some teams that put it in their signature line, put their top two roles in their signature line so that it's ever present. I've seen companies, this is of course back in the day, more before COVID, but where there's like a poster in the break room where they have everybody's top two roles, or some people put them, like some teams I've seen in their offices, like have them, because the roles have also icons. So they have like the icons on their office door. Beyond that though, I think it's really important to understand these are our individual strengths. Then collectively, what does this mean for the team and where are their gaps and where can we be really deliberate? So I'll give you an example. I did a workshop over the summer with a company and they realized that the pioneer strength role, standout role, which is more as it sounds, more about taking risks. They realized that there was zero pioneer. So team of about 10 people, nobody was pioneer as their top two roles. Well, they had this aha moment that is why, no kidding, they're not really, they're playing it safe. They're not taking risks. And so they built that into, they built like a roundtable devil's advocate person to like challenge the status quo. And every quarter it changes who takes turns, because it's nobody's strength. So let's all get out of our comfort zone. So there's an example of a company that very intentionally said, this is a gap. Let's figure out how to close the gap. And then on the plus side, you can say, well, hey, this, let's say somebody who's a high connector, you can point out and go, let's pull the chart out, because you can just, you know, easy peasy on a Excel spreadsheet, have a bar graph of everybody's strengths. The right thing to do is to have a new project or a new task and look and go, oh, you're a high connector. This requires somebody that's going to go to that recruiting event. Could you be the one to go? So ideally you pick, it helps to drive decisions on who does what kind of projects.
That's fantastic. Well, you know, I think there's a lot of different directions we can go here, but and I know we got this assessment that I took. We're going to kind of dive into it a little bit. Maybe now's a good time to kind of feel that open a little bit and let people know a little bit more detail about what that assessment even might look like.
Yeah, great. So you said that I think the word you used was uncanny.
Yeah.
And so tell me more about some of the ways that it popped off the page for you. What really resonated? And what's even more powerful, if you could think of it, is an example or two of where some of these bullet points in the assessment, you're like, oh, I remember last week. Or some people go, wow, as a kid, that was always me. So
sure.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but anything that truly resonated for you to share.
Yeah, happy to. I mean, honestly, I mean, like as soon as I opened up within the first page, there's like these two avatars or these two images, one's of teacher and one's of creator. And I mean, I have literally been a teacher in the past. I've been a professor. Most of my career has been about helping others learn more about the world around them and more about themselves. And now, and I also had a film production company for the better part of a decade. So, you know, creator, teacher, right there, just from those examples. But now in my current iteration of my career, I'm a coach and I help people learn more about themselves. And a big part of the work that I do is as a content creator. So I'm constantly posting mm-hmm. things on LinkedIn. I have a newsletter, I have a blog, I have a podcast, I have all these various different surfaces where I'm helping people better understand themselves and the world around them through education. Mm-hmm. So right off the bat, that was like a huge bell ringer. And then within the first paragraph of the assessment, it says, you are a maker and a breaker of molds. While you love to teach others, you know that there is no such thing as a standard set of instructions or curriculum for everyone. And that's literally my whole MO. You know, it's customized workflows. It's working really closely with somebody to get a better understanding of what their values are, what their needs are, what their boundaries and non-negotiables are, and creating ways of working with them that's very customized to their specific disposition and their specific needs. So yeah. All of that was like high up there. And then even like as I looked at the rank order of the strengths, so teacher, creator were my top two. Looking at the other three, it was provider, advisor, and equalizer. And it's like, okay, like all of these things are pretty high up in my list of value sets and the ways that I like to show up in the world for others.
Yeah. And the time I've gotten to know you, I have noted the same thing. And also I should add, and I know I just want to apologize to your audience that you and I have the visual of this and I don't, and they're listening, they have the audio, but you'll notice that the length of the lines are all different. And this really is a stack ranking order. So your influencer is your number nine, your lowest. It doesn't mean that you're not an influencer. It doesn't mean you don't have that in you. Some, like if you take Myers-Briggs and other assessments, it's like you are these things, so you're not those things. In Standout, you have all nine in you. It's just the question to which it is truly your natural edge. Mm-hmm. So there you go. So it's not to say that you can't do all of those and do that well, but it's not your natural edge. If you're in a room with other people that have your lower ones as higher, mm-hmm. they're just going to naturally shine and do those things. But if nobody else has those things, you can step in and do it. You're just going to be a little bit more exhausted and it's just going to be a little bit not as natural for you. And I see a lot of these strengths roles as energy. And this in a bit of a way goes back to a question you asked a little while ago about how do you even know what your strengths are. Mm-hmm. For me, if you think about the things that you have high energy before you do them, you're excited to do them, you're in the zone energetic during, and sometimes even after. You ever like you finish doing something, like maybe you've written something that you feel good at, and you still kind of feel that buzz? Your top roles is really like that sense of energy, which means it's probably the things on your to-do list that you do first. Mm-hmm. You know, those things that like you rewrite and you rewrite and you rewrite. Maybe it's just me that does that.
That's me too.
Yeah. Those things, probably a hint that they're not in your strength zone.
Yeah, it makes a ton of sense. And actually, you know, just thinking about the influencer bit, like that was some of the things that I struggled with the most. And this was almost came to me as an identity conflict. So I was in corporate America for 22 years total, but I was in big tech for 13. I always found the most difficulty in influencing others without authority. And also mm-hmm. the politics of those environments. Mm-hmm. Those two things were like my complete kryptonite. And after going through the strength assessment, like reading through some of the definitions and how this kind of shows up, it's like, well, yeah, that makes a ton of sense. Like the things that I'm the best at are I'm not able to lean into those strengths and the types of roles that I had always.
Yeah. And a lot of people do use it for that exact aha, like, no wonder I'm so unhappy at work. And there is a page in here. I personally don't use this much for career coaching, but some people do. And you may have noticed that page 12, it's called the Career Advantage. And it gives you a sense. It's not intended as a thorough career planning inventory, but some people do get good ahas that you just had about what might be the right or wrong job based on how they use their strengths.
Yeah. And even just pulling this one up for me, it's so obvious to me after reading this. Yeah, you will excel where the team is small and where the need for change is urgent. Like the teams that I was really most successful at in my prior career were startup type, early phase, early development teams, a handful of people wearing multiple hats. And there was a lot of momentum that needed to be achieved in a very short period of time. That is exactly what I've been doing now with the Changing Work Collective. It's a team of three, mostly all volunteers. Everything mm-hmm. is urgent and we're cranking very, very quickly to build up this mm-hmm. Collective.
Small team.
in a small team. So it made so much sense to me when I read this. It's like, oh, great. I'm actually aligned with what I'm doing right now.
Well, and I have to even laugh. It says that you should avoid highly regulated, unionized environments, such as government agencies, manufacturing plants. Yeah, I don't see that being your jam.
Yeah, definitely. And I've done academia before. I've done big tech and corporate. And like, I tried really, really hard to fit in those environments and just was not able to really make it work. And I know a lot of people did. And for me, for the longest time, I took that as like a personal failing. It was like, well, there must be something wrong with me that I'm not able to like function in these environments. And after a lot of introspection and a lot of reflection, what I came to realize was, I was like, it's nothing wrong with me. It's just those environments aren't the right environments for me. I need to seek other environments where I can really thrive.
Yes. Brilliant. And there's also a letting go of self-judgment in all of this and having more self-compassion mm-hmm. and appreciating. I mean, I have clients that realize like, I don't have to be great at everything. I have to be really clear on what I'm great at and surround myself by other people that strengths that complement mine. I know that sounds really obvious, but some people have been raised like you and I have of like you perfection. And if you aren't perfect, then you suck. And, or at least that's the message we've been giving ourselves in our head, the self-deprecating stuff. And it's really freeing to like differentiate between what I'm great at, so I should do more of it, and what I can let go of. And by the way, there's a really important message in all of this that I haven't mentioned, which is that we all have to work on our weaknesses. It's not this model is not about throw that away. This model is like, call it an 80-20 rule. It's how much of your time do you spend doing that? So if you were inside a big tech company to help teams work better and you had to show up and, you know, be all day long for a day a week for a few months or even a few weeks in a row, you would do just fine. And it's just like not you what you want all the time. So mm-hmm. for me, for example, one of my weaknesses is the whole billing and invoicing and the bookkeeping and that part of my business. And so I've figured out strategies to get around that. So instead of, I mentioned the rewriting on the to-do list over and over again, I finally stopped the madness there. Last Friday of the month, I have 2 hours blocked. I turn off everything else. I don't get interrupted by the pings and the dings. And I reward myself with my favorite Starbucks drink after. Like I've created strategies to make it work. And then other times, there's other things you can do. And I have a list of things you can do. But I just want to send the message. not only do we have to still work on our weaknesses in most of our environments, but many of us enjoy it. I enjoy learning and growing and doing different things. It's just a question of in moderation that we are not spending so much time on our weaknesses that we are feeling exhausted, depleted, and frankly, unsuccessful.
Yeah, no, it's a really well put. You know, and I'm kind of, again, curious, you know, within the teams and the environments that you work with, you know, where do you see people kind of like, you know, maybe taking these assessments and like not really utilizing them as effectively as they can, or maybe... I know in my past, like I've done personality assessments, I've done different types of tools within organizations. And in some cases, that information becomes weaponized against the individual and it almost gets kind of flipped on its head. I don't think that this is exactly something that would encourage that, but like I'm imagining that this is not always skillfully executed.
Yeah, it can happen. I mean, for example, I do a lot of work with 360 degree assessments, and sometimes clients bring me in and say, oh, we want to figure out if this person should stay or go. I'm like, that is not what this is for. I do 360s for development purposes. You need to find a different method. If you want to decide if somebody should stay or go, you need to make a courageous decision based on their performance and their impact. So yes, I am with you 100% for these to be used for learning and growth. But you're right that they do get forgotten. And I'm sadly, as the leader of many workshops, I fear that that has happened. I've led some great workshops and it's like, okay, we're busy, move on. One thing I do recommend is that I do think that everybody should have some sort of a at least quarterly check-in with themselves. Some people want to do it monthly or even every 2 weeks, but at least quarterly, put it on your calendar to repeat. And I know you are great at having a practice of certain self-reflection questions. Mm-hmm. And so it would be your favorite self-reflection questions. In addition to, one of them would be, am I using my strengths? And it could be that you just pull out, you know, maybe you have a few actions, like I'm going to pull out my goals. I'm going to pull out my standout, for example. So it's like any other kind of routine. The only way for me to stay healthy is to keep going to the gym. I can't go once and then go, great, I'm healthy. So similarly, the only way for me to keep using my strengths is to keep reminding myself of what they are. And the last piece of advice I will share is that the most effective way for this stuff to really stick is to have a strengths-based culture. So if you, for example, with a changing work team, wanted everybody to do this and then to have conversations about how do we best want to leverage each other's strengths, and then once a quarter or twice a year, how are we doing on that? The accountability for your manager to go, what have you been doing that has been in your strength zone, is really powerful. So it's not just on you to keep it up.
Again, a really important distinction to make, you know, and going back to this idea of culture and cultivating a culture where people can really thrive. You know, I guess the question that for me that comes up, and you kind of mentioned it in passing, is like, oh, we're really, really busy, so we don't really have time to go back and revisit this strengths workshop that we did. But we're always busy. There's always a good excuse as to why we shouldn't be doing those things. Like, what are some of the recommendations that you would make for leaders to be able to engage and motivate their teams? Like, even when times are tough or even when things are busy, like how do we bring them back to these types of tools and use them really effectively?
Yeah, I think ideally it's built into the way you do business. So many teams have some sort of a dashboard, green, yellow, red, high, medium, and low. How are we doing against our goals or other metrics? Put the people stuff in there as well. Put a people section on your dashboard to say, are we human-centered? Are we leveraging our strengths? I mean, we can go on and on, but so many companies have an engagement survey, and what happens? It's one and done. We get the data, we spin up tiger teams, we have initiatives and programs, and then kind of a little bit of action happens, falls by the wayside, and a year later we do another engagement survey and we repeat the same mess. But if we had some of those key metrics on those dashboards, some sort of building it into the routine, again, using the going to the gym, we need the habits and the routines on this stuff. Otherwise, they're probably just not going to stick. Now, you and I both know some really amazing managers who naturally do this. They naturally ask these questions in most one-on-ones. They naturally are caring and empathetic and lead with a lot of what we're talking about. But unfortunately, it's not natural for a lot of people. And two, you know what, in the world of things being busy and having like a whole list of things to talk about in those one-on-ones of angry customers and decisions that are open and all kinds of other things, sometimes we do need to force it in because it doesn't naturally fit into our schedules.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. You know, I'm kind of curious too, you know, in terms of, well, obviously there's, we're talking about strengths, we're talking about this like human-centered organization approach to working with employees and working with each other. You know, what else would you say is like really required as a leader to help foster an environment where teams can perform in a highly effective way, in a highly productive way, and also be able to make people feel like they are humans too at work?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to oversimplify my answer with one word, which is communication. Mm-hmm. And this sense of creating the space for open dialogue, having the one-on-ones that are just white space and not necessarily agenda driven. I personally, in one-on-ones and team meetings, like to use three questions for, instead of having a long, lengthy agenda and I'm meeting with my boss, I need to put together an agenda, three questions. First question is, what's going well that you're celebrating? Mm-hmm. So that's basically a strengths-based question. What's hard or where are you stuck? And what's next? And here's the thing with those three questions. You can answer them on work stuff or personal stuff or both. And I personally like to create, I'll put in air quotes, a rule that at least one of them, you're sharing a work thing and a personal thing. Mm. Because it brings out that human side. So it gives you flexibility. You can share any of those things. You know, what am I celebrating? I just became an aunt for the first time. What's hard? My two-year-old won't sleep through the night. What's next? I'm getting ready to go on vacation. You know, so you have freedom to share something about you without it feeling like too personal, but also the freedom to get the support from your manager. And in my experience, it's a good way to hear about really everything relevant that's going on in the team without micromanaging and without having a detailed agenda. So maybe oversimplified, but I think it creates space for the human connection and thus being supported, because that's another important thing that managers need to do is clear the way, remove barriers, mm-hmm. and help you celebrate the good.
Oh man, I love this so much. Yeah. So I guess one last question I have for you too, you know, as we're kind of thinking about all of these different ways of approaching a human-centered organization, human-centered leadership, leaning into strengths, you know, are there like a handful of things besides just communication that you would recommend that really moves the needle to make a meaningful impact within an organization?
Boy, that there's so many things. How do I? So your question is the things that most move a needle within an organization. Yeah. So in addition to communication, I would say that it is certainly clarity on the big why. Why do we exist? It's that whole idea of feeling that sense of purpose and direction. So clarity on why we exist and what my role is to make that happen. And then also to have that sense of purpose and passion on the why we exist, you know, otherwise work can feel so repeated and pointless. Mm-hmm. And, also to have a sense of, I think I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the whole idea of well-being and the fact that companies need to build that in, you know. We could be a great team and we communicate, but if people are running themselves into the ground, mm-hmm. if they are exhausted and all the other things that lead to burnout, as you and I well know from working with our clients and our own personal experiences, you know, the best cultures, the best leaders, it all goes out the window if people are feeling like garbage and making themselves sick.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess for employees or for individuals, if they're seeking out coaching or they're seeking out support and they're interested in strengths building or strengths-based coaching, you know, what are some things that they should ask? What are some things that they should look out for to really align themselves with the right type of coach or the right type of modality that might really serve them?
Yeah. Well, they can say something like, I've read about a strengths-based approach. Tell me if that resonates with you and if you do anything along those lines would probably be the simplest way. Obviously, there are plenty of people who are certified as I am in standout or other strengths-based assessments, but you can be a strengths-based. I'm sure, Nicholas, without knowing it, you're a strengths-based coach. So the first question is, if you say this is really hard for me, well, what do you know that you do well to help that become easier or better for you? And sometimes your strength is simply, you know, I really care about my team. Like, I don't know how to deal with these performance issues, but if your strength is, I really care about these people, I want them to succeed, compared to, I don't give a crap about them, that's a very different baseline. So just understanding if the approach is through asking questions like that, I think would be a good starting point.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And Bonnie, like, what are the types of clients that you like to best work with?
Yeah, well, I work with anybody from some individual contributors, a whole lot of new managers. I really have a lot of passion about that group of people who get promoted and they've been highly successful as an engineer. And they're like, whoa, nobody told me about this manager stuff. I thought I knew it because I've been watching my own manager do it all these years, but there's a lot of stuff that nobody told me about. So anybody who is looking to move the needle and improve their impact, certainly if this idea of being human-centered resonates, that is a great starting point, because a lot of people do get excited. They're like, I haven't heard anybody talk about that before, and I want to do the assessment, and I want to know my strengths. But really, anybody who's looking to increase their impact, because what I work on runs the gamut, the strategic stuff around creating vision and strategy, the more day-to-day stuff like time management and healthy habits and presentation skills. So anybody who's feeling like they want to move the needle. And by the way, it's sometimes in one-on-one coaching, it's sometimes in team workshops, like, wow, I need this, but what if my whole team builds healthy habits? What if we supported each other? One-on-one would be great, but even better if we did it as a team. And then sometimes it's more consulting projects. Sometimes change needs to happen at the organization level, which I love to dig in and ask questions and understand the root causes of some of these challenges around culture and engagement and leadership. Sometimes, of course, you know this from working in big companies, you don't have the power to do that. So I'll start at my level and I can impact my 10 people, my 50 people, my 500 people. I'm not the CEO, so I can't, but you know, change has to start somewhere. So that's great.
Yeah, makes sense. So Bonnie, you know, if folks are interested in reaching out to you and learning more about what you do and potentially working with you as a client, where can people find you?
Well, I mentioned HewWorkTeam.com is our website. We have a handy dandy little contact us link there, as well as a whole bunch of articles and blog posts to learn more on your own DIY type of stuff. I am a bit of a LinkedIn geek, as you know, so I am on there almost daily. So please reach out. I'm happy to chat there. And those would be probably the two best ways.
Perfect. Yes. Bonnie, anything else you'd like to offer folks that may be listening and kind of exploring these new concepts and exploring like a little bit more introspection in their own world?
I would suggest start out with this idea of strengths lens on your own immediately. When you get stuck, when something's hard, it could be in your personal life, in your professional life, ask yourself, what do I know that I do really well to help me get better at this? As you notice your own negative self-talk, we all have it. The I'm not enough, I should do more, beating ourselves up, ask yourself, what's one thing I know I do well that can help me get better at this? As you are angry at people at work or in your personal life, ask yourself, what's a strength that they bring to the table? I promise you, even the most terrible of people in the world that we really don't like, I promise you they bring some strengths and it will help your relationships and results. So just start to think about that strengths lens. You can do it immediately. No coaching needed.
Wonderful. Well, Bonnie, thank you so much for your knowledge. Thanks for all the work that you're doing out here in the world. Folks, if you're listening and you're interested in learning more about Bonnie, the links that she mentioned will be in the speaker notes and the show notes below. Feel free to join us for our next episode of the Needs Improvement Podcast, which will be coming out in a few weeks. And thank you so much for being here. Thanks, Bonnie. You have a wonderful
afternoon. This was so fun for me. Thank you for the time. Appreciate it. Have a good one.
My pleasure. Thank you. All right, that's a wrap for today's episode of the Needs Improvement Podcast. If our conversation resonated with you, do us a favor. Share this episode with your network. We'll be back next month diving even deeper into what needs improvement in the modern workplace. Until then, take what you've learned and make your workplace a better place to be. See you soon.